like Mark. Hold on. This is a recent episode of Return to Thunder Bay that we're very proud of. Heard the way that Mark Weisblatt here listens to podcasts.
DeMozzi's tabloid coverage told his readers nothing about his own tragic struggles until those struggles were over forever.
I'm Ryan McMahon, and this is Return to Thunder Bay.
I'm Greg Giddens. I'm the managing editor of the Chronicle Journal. It's the daily newspaper of Northwestern Ontario. Yeah, I started there about 20 years ago.
Who hurt you, Mark?
Yeah, what's the problem?
Why do you want to do that to yourself?
I know you're building up Canada Land. You're working with great producers who spend a lot of time on their sound design. And I'm sure when you have your all-hands staff Zoom meetings, you would never want to admit to listening to their work in double speed. It's kind of like that you want to make it sound like you paid for that Panic at the Disco album that you didn't download it from LimeWire, or you weren't looking around for torrents of Wonder Woman, or you would never illegally download any Jordan Peterson ebooks, right? You want to sound ethical, but you're telling me that you've never resorted to double speed listening to get through all the podcasts that are out there. Not even when it's one of those like 12 part true crime documentaries. It's only like 22 minutes of material that they've dragged in there to keep you tuned. You've got 17 different shows that are made every day to try and explain the news to you in the length of a commute. I'm not commuting anywhere. What do I have to hear these shows in real time for? I'm mainlining everything that I want to listen to. Look, when I was growing up, I couldn't get enough television channels to flip through. I wish that the radio guy would cover the entire world. I feel terrible that I could wait to get a million before they could curate this reality.
You say you read everything we send you. I have told you I'll subscribe to your show if you start pronouncing it the right way.
I read your email. I remember it now.
If you're trying to bridge the so-called two solitudes, but then you're saying Quebec, so I don't know. Are you?
Yeah. No, you just won an argument, my friend. Mon frère, you just won an argument. From now on, Canada Land, Quebec.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you for the call. Happy holidays.
Thank you. And thank you for all your work.
You're very welcome. You take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, we'll have to take that one. And your 5 minutes are up. All right.
Thank you for your call. Have a good day.
I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you so much for the call. And happy holidays to you and yours.
Thank you. Same to you.
I think that's a wrap.
Yeah. How do you think that went? How was it to argue with your fans and not so much fans for 2 hours?
I'm like a little bit exhausted, but I also feel like in some other universe, I could like, I think they used to have like dance competitions where it wasn't about how good you could dance, but how long you could dance. I kind of feel like this is my thing. I feel like I could go a lot longer if I had to.
Well, Jesse, I certainly wouldn't argue with you about that.
Oh God, Kasia.
Good job, Jesse.
Thank you very much. That is your Canada Land. Kasia Mihailovich produced this show with the help of Rosalind Kufour and Damilola Onime. Engineering by Gabe Knox. Our managing editor is Andrea Schmidt. Our theme music is by So Cold. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Pam Gouli is a Canada Land editor-in-chief, CJFE board member, and person who is just generally everywhere all at once. I think you're in person in the past week and a half. You were in Ottawa, Montreal, and Vancouver somehow.
I'm here.
And now you're here opposite like magic. Me on Shortcuts. Welcome back to Shortcuts. Today on the show, Duly Noted and Duly Noted Again. Oops, all Duly Noted. A Shortcuts Duly Noted extravaganza. Welcome back to Shortcuts, Karen, where we talk shit about the news.
Thank you for having me.
So, as you know, Karen, on this show, we like to duly note things. Today, we will duly note or note duly maybe a half dozen things, give or take. I believe we will start off with something that you would like to note duly.
Yes, I'd like to duly note that I woke up and was like scrounging around for coffee and looking at stories to cover, you know, as reporters do around 8:30, 9 a.m.
Is this Tuesday morning?
Tuesday morning. I don't never post on X or Twitter or Twixter or whatever it's called these days. But I do ghost around and look for things. And, you know, I came across the weirdest thing. I used to be a Hill reporter, and this is what was weird about it. It's on Pierre Poilievre's Twitter feed. And it's this, first of all, you know, explosive testimony, whistleblower from Trudeau's $1 billion green slush fund, you know, like kind of headline. But what really caught my eye is it's this video of somebody testifying before committee in Parliament, and their face is blurred.
The SDTC board, executives, and senior management must be held accountable for their gross mismanagement of taxpayer money and the gross misconduct that's been perpetrated by the toxic senior management team that has victimized countless employees. And the federal government must also be held accountable for its embarrassing lack of oversight that's allowed these problems to persist and its egregious cover-up of the truth that occurred this fall.
And I thought that was really weird because I have never seen that before in my life. And I'm like, why is this face blurred? Like, who goes to, like, if you're going to have an in-camera committee, then it's in-camera and nobody sees it. But then when you publicly testify, like, what is Parliament blurring faces now? That, I mean, like, it's just weird. So I clicked through, and actually Pierre Poilievre wasn't the first person to post it. He was actually reposting it from one of his Ontario MPs. And then I took a look at that and I decided I'm going to go back and find out which committee this was. And so it was actually a committee Monday night, like the previous night. What it was is it's a story that's actually been in the news for a bit that's just gotten new legs again. And so about last spring, some employees inside the Sustainable Developed Technology Canada's Are you aware of this, the green fund? You know about this?
I feel bad that it was not something I had paid any attention to. I guess I hear the term as, you know, the Conservatives tossed around, green slush fund. I sort of automatically roll my eyes, or not roll my eyes. I'm like, I'm going to go on to the next thing now. I mean, it legitimately sounds like a very real issue here.
Yeah, because I mean, that's exactly the problem. The overhype about green slush fund kind of turns you off because it sounds like, I don't know, like just hyper
hyper-partisan.
Yeah, hyper-partisan.
Ratcheted up. I mean, you know, the sort of, I don't know, red meat's such a cliche. It's the sort of like maybe well-seasoned, properly cooked meat.
This is green meat. The kind that Conservatives hate the most of all, the green meat. They will not eat green eggs and ham. But when I tell you it's about the Sustainable Development Technology Canada's scandal, I mean, like, maybe the word scandal will get your attention, but it just sounds so dull. Like, who would pay attention to this, right? So what it is that last spring, some employees inside the Sustainable Development Technology Canada accused the leadership of breaching conflict of interest rules and funding ineligible projects. Then, you know, the government appointed a third party to look into it, and they did find that these complaints had some legs. And so a report came out. The chief executive officer resigned last month. And now what was happening is a former employee was going to testify before committee and give more evidence. And that evidence was that this witness says that tens of millions of dollars of public funds were misspent by the foundation and that it still hasn't been settled. So fine. So it is a story. But here's what I was thinking. I was like, okay, this committee was at 8 p.m. the night before. Now,
this is the Standing Committee on Industry and Technology, or the SCIT, or actually it's called the INDU, but
Yeah. An 8 o'clock committee meeting is not something that a lot of journalists pay attention to normally. So this would have just slipped by. And I was wondering, did anybody actually cover it before Poilievre tweeted about it? Or did Poilievre's tweet draw attention to it and restart the news cycle? Now, I can't say for sure, but I did notice that the Globe and Mail had an article on it that came out soon after the committee. And then the next day, shortly after Polyev's tweet, people start to pick it up. Like there was actually something that had gone on that they missed. Now, was it because of his tweet? I can't say. But I knew about the story because of his tweet. So it's quite possible that that tweet worked to get the news cycle on an issue that the Conservatives wanted to be on. So I would just say, well played, Mr. Polyev. Well played.
But it's an interesting, it's an eye-catching tweet because they blurred the face. But the person, what it was interesting is the first, the initial question was like, wait, was this guy's face blurred on the original feed? And the answer was no. He was fully visible, and clearly everyone who we work with would know who it is. But what I did find interesting was that the blurring itself, I don't think it was unreasonable in the context, because in introducing him at committee, the chair of the committee, Liberal Joelle Lightbound, which is a pretty cool name, noted basically that the person wanted to testify. He didn't say semi-anonymously, that's sort of my interpretation, but basically he didn't want his name used. He was just listed on the notice paper as witness one, and the chair said, like, well, he doesn't want his name used, and I ask that the members of the committee please respect that. And so even though, clearly this person testifying, he would obviously know this whistleblower would know that, everyone he's ever met would recognize him there who would see this, or like anyone he'd work with, like they'd know that. So presumably he just didn't want his name to be easily Googleable. That said, I feel like it's in the spirit of that request to keep him sort of semi-anonymous that the blurring actually kind of makes sense. Like if you're going to go out of your way to spread this further, it feels not unreasonable.
You know who did publish a picture of him?
The Globe?
CBC.
CBC.
Yeah, CBC did. They published a picture, and they actually noted in their story, I don't know if it became an issue or what. It was such a weird thing to put in the story, but they put in that although he was unnamed, like all witnesses show their identity in committee. So they actually mentioned that in the write-up.
Our initial impression was that, the Conservatives are trying to make it look shadier than it is. They're trying to make it look extra
That's what
dicey.
I thought, too. They were trying to juice it up. And I don't know. Maybe
they kind of are. They are.
I just had never seen anybody take a parliamentary feed and kind of doctor it in that way before. And they certainly didn't say, we've changed this footage, or we have done something with it. You know, what drove me there in the first place to check it out was, has Parliament done something I've never seen before? And the answer was nope.
No, they don't have a tendency to do that very often. Duly noted.
Boop, boop. Did I do that right? Boop, boop. So do you have something to duly note, Jonathan? I think it's your turn.
One thing I'd like to duly note is something that it's a detail buried in a story by Robin Doolittle and Tom Cardoso at the Globe and Mail as part of their Secret Canada project.
By the way, that's a great series.
Yeah, and I think, we should start by duly noting the Secret Canada Project overall, which I don't think we've talked about on this show.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of these big Globe projects that will likely be nominated for and perhaps win some awards early next year. It began, it's a project by longtime investigative reporter Robin Doolittle and slightly less longtime investigative reporter Tom Cardoso, basically looking at access to information legislation across the country, which, as you probably have heard many times in the show, is just generally... And to say it's broken implies that it's fallen apart. And while it absolutely has fallen apart and eroded, it's also been, dismantled by design.
It is terrible. I used to be able to get something back if I was specific in like 6 weeks. Now it's like you just never know. People leave jobs and, switch careers and don't get their stuff back.
Yeah, it does raise the question of like whether it's even, it is worth the trouble to still have it. But so there was a very large project. And the heart of this project, which launched in the spring, is a database that tries to... it's an audit and a database. So the audit, basically, they sent nearly identical requests to basically every federal department agency, every provincial department agency, as well as a bunch of school boards, municipalities, and police forces across the country to sort of try to figure out, like, how are they doing? What are their statistics? And the other thing is, so they could compile one central database of all the requests that they have received that they have fulfilled within basically from the start of 2021 onward, and the idea is that it'd be a gradual rolling thing. Because in theory, once a record has been disclosed via an access to information request, anyone can then just easily contact the institution again and say, hey, could you just send that to me now? You don't have to go through, it's a much shorter form, you don't have to pay. It's a lot less bullshit, and it happens a lot faster. And so you can go, like the federal government, for example, has an Open Canada database where they have list all the tens of thousands that have been requested across the federal government. It's fun to sometimes type in keywords and see what mm-hmm. people have asked for and just fill out the form and request it. And you'll get it a few days to weeks later. And it's a fun way to browse information. BC is actually really fun because they actually post all the requests that have been fulfilled online. It's not
oh,
as
I didn't
easy
know
to,
that.
Yeah, it's not as easy to search, but they're all there. All the gigantic files are there. And the original idea with Secret Canada is not just to have a database of all the requests that in central place for people to say, okay, this is the information, but was to actually act as a repository for all the information that's already been released.
Oh, okay.
Which actually makes way more sense on mm-hmm. a conceptual level. Like, okay, that'd be an incredible resource if you didn't have to just request things, but like if it were all here and you could just like
just start reading
it. Oh my God, that looks spectacular. They pretty quickly realized that logistically that would be well beyond the scope of what they could do.
Yeah, it's like creating a whole archive.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, just even the thing she mentioned, just the hosting fees for hosting like hundreds of thousands of gigantic PDFs, which are often like, 100 megabytes each, would be, I mean, the globe probably has the money if they really wanted to, but it's an incredible, you basically have to start like a whole nonprofit foundation.
Exactly. Like it would be a whole different job, like trying to actually run a news agency and do that. It's like there's two different things, but what a useful idea.
All of which is to go back to my original duly noted point, which is the detail buried in the story that Robin drew extra attention to on Twitter, which is that in New Brunswick, perhaps not too surprisingly, is one of the worst provinces when it comes to government transparency and just access to information generally.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I would have thought that Ontario would be pretty bad, but okay.
Oh, no, there are different respects in which each province is worse. Like, I believe Ontario takes longer to respond to requests. But at least in Ontario, for example, if you appeal to the Information and Privacy Commissioner of Ontario, so if you have to get them to deliver a ruling on, they shouldn't have denied you this record, the Information and Privacy Commissioner could then force an institution to turn over that record, to disclose that. And if the government doesn't like it, they can then take it to court. My understanding is in New Brunswick, although there are appeals to an ombudsman, that the ombudsman doesn't actually have the power to force them to do anything. If you want the government to do something, you have to take them to court, which, not a lot of people are going to do. But the one particular interesting detail was in this list of proposals or recommendations for updates to New Brunswick's information legislation to modify the definition of record in the law to limit it to existing physical records and to exclude automated electronic records such as system logs, metadata.
Emails.
Exactly. Like what it's, I went to the report.
Everything is electronic. Briefing notes are electronic. Like everything is electronic now. Who prints on paper anymore?
Their current law, the definition of record in it is as expansive as you would hope it would be, which is to say record means a record information in any form and includes information that is written, photographed, recorded, or stored in any manner on any storage medium or by any means, which is just, I love, beautifully expansive. That's what you want. Oh, including by graphic, electronic, or mechanical means, but does not include software or any mechanism that produces records. But anyway, that's lovely. And so the idea that they would want to take that beautifully expansive definition and narrow it down to physical records, even if that existing physical records doesn't literally mean have we printed it already, and there's strong reason to believe it does, that's still concerning, especially in a province that is already not great when it comes to
And databases are just such a big part of what people are requesting these days, because data journalism, it just wouldn't.
You could say that the system has fallen apart, and it has, but that's only part of the story, since it also seems to have been actively dismantled and undermined for deliberate and obvious reasons.
I will duly note you, sir.
Thank you. Now, Karen, what is something about which duly you would like to note?
Okay, I think everybody's seen this. There was a newscast on CTV.
CTV Toronto, I think, right?
CTV Toronto. And the broadcast was supposed to be of an annual event.
An event, a signature event, is happening here in Toronto later this evening. Our Allison Hurst joins us now with more on what is planned. And Allison, it's typically a celebration, but of course this year is very different.
They were announcing that Hanukkah was starting, and they had their reporter out on scene. And she starts describing that there's this large menorah that goes up every year, and they're about to light it. And so it's this celebrating Hanukkah event in Toronto.
Yes, there's a lot going on right now, but this is a time where they're hoping that they will all be able to come together. There have been crews coming by, bringing the pieces to begin the setup ahead of tonight's event. It will be a 7 or 8 foot menorah that is set up here on the
stage. Most generic sort of local news noon hour package. Hanukkah event in Toronto is the lower third. It's Mel Lastman Square in North York. just general shots of like, oh, here's the menorah, here's Mossman Square, here's some tents, here's a sign that says Happy Hanukkah on menorah.
And so you get the Happy Hanukkah sign and she's announcing, and then all of a sudden there's this abrupt cut to shots of the war, you know.
Or at least what's presumably good Gaza.
Yeah, presumably Gaza. There's, you know, just rubble in the streets. There's people carrying children who've been wounded, children who are bleeding. And this is like just cut into that Hanukkah story.
Yeah. And the narration continues for a time and then cuts out. And then eventually, just as abruptly as the other footage comes in, it sort of ends with cutting back to a CEO of the Jewish Russian Community Center of Ontario saying,
I mean, that's really what Hanukkah is about. It's about lighting a candle and darkness goes away.
And so every now and then they will put up, as they have with some of our guests, a picture of somebody who has said something that they disagree with. But when they recount what was actually said, it is not always accurate, or at least to my read, it's not always accurate. So I had some questions about whether or not, and with everything, frankly, online that I see these days, I have questions about whether or not what I'm seeing is real. But as it turned out, this video actually did air the way that...
It doesn't appear to have been edited or doctored in any way.
Yeah.
Or at least if it has, then CTV should probably have said so by now.
Yeah, they did say it was an error, but they didn't say why it happened.
We're having some technical difficulties there with Allison's mic.
And so it opened this whole conversation about, was this somebody gone rogue who had done this on purpose? Or was this simply a mistake that, like a really horrible mistake that kind of happened, like one of the most unfortunate things that could happen really at this time, you know, in this space? And I don't know. They haven't told us. They'll probably never tell us. But one of the things that I had heard is that maybe they grabbed the wrong feed. So this means that they would have been playing from a live location and went to take some cut tape that they had labeled and just kind of feed it in, like stream it in from another source. I don't know how likely that is unless they actually mislabeled it, because usually like things are labeled pretty specifically in newsrooms. So a scene of a war, you know, and people getting hurt in Gaza would have been labeled quite differently from Hanukkah. And so the other thing that came up is, could it have been somebody who'd gone rogue, who'd actually edited this footage in on purpose as part of a statement that they were trying to make? And I guess, like, we don't know. And, you know, CTV hasn't said anything to clarify why it happened.
I believe they've apologized for, like, technical error or technical difficulties or something along those lines. I don't think those are the exact terms, but terms that offer but as much clarity as technical difficulties.
We would like to apologize for an error in our noon newscast earlier today. As a result of a technical issue, we mistakenly aired images of the war in the Middle East while reporting on the beginning of Hanukkah. We are deeply sorry that this occurred during our coverage of this important and special event.
So that is, I guess, all we're going to know about it.
Duly noted. Shortcuts for this week. Thanks for joining me again, Karen.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always so fun.
We are on X at CanadaLand. You can email me at jonathan@canadaland.com and find me on Blue Sky at, I don't know how those things, Goldsby, whatever have you. Where can people find you, Karen?
I barely am on X. I do kind of surf there, but I am totally moving to Blue Sky. Everybody move to Blue Sky. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, why not? I also co-host Wag the Dog. We'll have a new episode next week. This episode is produced by Aviva Lassard, with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo, and our editor-in-chief is you, Karen.
Wee!
Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Get up in the morning and I jump. It's not just in your head. You wish you were dead, but you're alright.
The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a jolly,
merry,
happy,
joyful,
fantastic,
exciting,
fancy,
magnificent,
remarkable,
special,
white,
sparkling,
terrific,
stunning,
festive, and wonderful holiday season.